Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC Studios, I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast. It's Wednesday, January 4th. Football fans are united in support of Damar Hamlin, the 24-year-old Buffalo Bills safety who went into cardiac arrest in the game against the Cincinnati Bengals on Monday night. He collapsed just after rising from a tackle. He tackled the other guy but got this injury, though we don't know exactly why this happened physiologically. Medical personnel rushed onto the field and performed CPR, restarting Hamlin's heart as players from both teams looked on in horror. And Damar Hamlin remains in critical condition. And while this injury is unique, this truly terrifying medical emergency is shining a light once again on the NFL's perennial injury crisis. I think it's fair to call it a perennial, an ongoing, a sort of permanent injury crisis. It is a violent game. And even when the hits aren't this disastrous, injuries are an ordinary occurrence. Now, as America's favorite spectator sport, maybe the hits add to football's appeal. Have we as spectators become just numb to the sight of snapping injuries on the field? Or even worse, are they part of the appeal? And what should come next for the NFL? Why do we even have this sport as something mainstream that has so much more routine, bone-crunching violence and throwing people to the ground as what you're supposed to do than other sports? Former longtime New York Times columnist William C. Roden joins us now to talk about the state of football in 2023 and talk about these questions. Bill is now a columnist for Anscape, formerly known as The Undefeated. He also wrote two important books, $40 Million Slave, The Rise and Fall and Redemption of the Black Athlete, and Third and a Mile, The Trials and Triumphs of the Black Quarterback. Hi, Bill. Always good to have you to talk sports and society, but I'm so sad it's under these circumstances this time. But welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian. A happy new year. And it's always a pleasure to talk to you. This is kind of a bummer, but, I always look forward to having an intelligent discussion about something like this, even if it's tragic.
Thank you. Were you watching the game live? What were you thinking or feeling,
as Hamlin collapsed? I was actually in Baltimore. I've been writing this series of pieces about Lamar Jackson, who's the Ravens quarterback, who's missed four games and is holding out for a fully guaranteed contract precisely because of this kind of nonsense. Putting my being on the line, my physical safety on the line, you get the best out of me. And when I ask for a guaranteed contract, you say no. And I just finished filing the column, and I'm looking at the Monday night game. And I guess where I'm going to go with this, Brian, is that I've spent the last kind of 72 hours really doing some soul searching and examining my own desensitivity to this kind of stuff, because I've been watching it for so long, and we've talked about it so long, and it's almost that these kind of things, and you hit about it, you refer to as numbing. And I realized that I had become really desensitized, because you see every single game, week after week, play after play, guys getting hurt, the players kneeling around, some walk off under their own power, some get helped off, some get carted off. And then, we're kind of back to, we're back to the action. And I was looking at this game, and I saw the guys circled around, and the sound was down. And I saw one commercial, then two commercials. Now the third commercial, I said, oh man, this is something. Because I guess one of the things I always thought, Brian, is what would happen if a player died on the field in prime time? We talk about the numbing and the violence, but for most of us, it's abstract. It's like kind of cartoon violence. How does it affect our fantasy teams? How does it affect the point spread? But only until something like this happens in prime time and is thrown in front of you that you really have to do some soul search in terms of what are we watching? Why are we watching? What are we doing? And that's sort of what I'm wrestling with now, is just trying to get back to connecting with my own desensitized souls and kind of figuring out, man, what are you complicit in this? You know?
Yeah. So, and I'll you know, be candid and transparent and say, I do watch football sometimes. I'm a Jets fan. And when the Jets are eliminated, which is every year, then I follow the other New York teams, the Giants and the Bills. And I like the strategies of the game. I like the different kinds of plays. I like the narrative arc of football. And then I do cringe at the violence, at the hits, even when nobody gets injured. I have a fairly routine reaction, like, oh, I'm watching this game where the object of the game, if you're on defense, is to throw other people to the ground. And the other sports that I like to watch are not like that. So it, you know, now that this happened, it makes me wrestle with the same thing you're wrestling with and think, well, why is this even a major sport? How did it get to this point? Why did this develop where something that has this so much routine violence, routine risk of injury, even if nobody's gone into cardiac arrest because of a hit before, how did this get to be the biggest sport in America, spectator-wise?
Yeah, you asked that. And I was trying to think of Roosevelt. When did it get the crossroads? And I know it probably had to do with television. You know, people look back to the sudden death game. Between Baltimore and the Giants. I think it was 1958. When the game was televised, great game, goes into sudden death. Baltimore wins. And people kind of look at that moment as the rise. And I also add in the steady influx of Black athletes into the game, when all of a sudden you've got speed and verticality and a certain style, things that really had not been present in the game before, wide open. And baseball, of course, has always just been baseball. It's just been, pastoral and nice, but there was not the kind of violence. I mean, you know, you were saying that you look away, but that I think you mentioned in your introduction to the subject, that's also the fascination.
Yeah.
Is that where do you see this kind of, you know, specialized violence that's unharnessed, you know, where people is hard hit and they show it over and over and over again on a key play, the ball is jarred loose. You're right. As you were saying, yeah, right. The skill is fine and all that. But what people like about this is the rock'em sock'em nature, because unless you're watching hockey, you know, I was teasing my my nephews who are big soccer fans, and I was watching from the World Cup. I said, Kevin, man, there's just not enough violence. You know,
yeah.
There's not enough time for commercial, and there's not enough rock'em sock'em hitting in this to appeal to us. And I guess the last thing I'd say, Brian, when we're talking about this morality, I was listening to another show, and it was a political show, and they were asking, in light of the George Santos things, what does it take for a politician to lose their career? What does it take? And we're in this era of shamelessness, where shamelessness wins. Shamelessness is the winning formula, because shamelessness is clicks. Shamelessness is attention. And I think the same thing in football. So what would it take to unplug football? Would, you know, and it gets, and I'm really at a loss, man. I'm really at a loss. I just think that's unfortunately where we are with this.
Contradictions in the rules, Bill. The way they smashed into each other in that play is considered a clean play, but one of the most common penalties in football is holding, which is just trying to hold somebody back from getting where they want to go without tackling them. I never understood that.
Well, you mentioned that. That was a great distinction. I mean, holding is codified in the rule books. In other words, you know, when you're an offensive lineman or a defensive back or a defensive player, and you're reaching out and you're holding somebody to impede their, if you're a lineman and you're holding the defensive lineman to stop them from you know, making a tackle or whatever. That's in the rule book, holy. But the collision, as we had mentioned, collisions are part and parcel of the essence of the game, smashing into someone. And that play, we had T. Higgins smashing into Damar Hamlin. That was basically a quote-unquote clean play because you had an offensive player who caught a pass and is now trying to break tackles, and there's a defender, Hamlin, in front of him, and he's simply trying to, like, go through him. You know, there's no holding, there's no – so if you outrule – if you outlaw that, Brian, you outlaw football. You know, that is out – you know, but if Hamlin, for example, was covering T. Higgins from the line, and his line, and as Higgins was going downfield, and they passed the 5-yard mark, and he reaches out and grabs his jersey, or grabs him, he would get flagged for that because that's holding. But after the catch is made, you're fair game, and you're in front of me. You're in front of Jim Brown, and Jim Brown is going to try to
run through you.
Through you. So, and that's just, you see how excited I get, you know, and that's, isn't that the problem, you know, but that's the essence of the game. And, you know, it's funny. I was having this conversation with a friend of mine who played for the Dallas Cowboys for about 9 years. And he was bemoaning the fact, as most, you know, older players do, that the game has gotten soft, you know, because of all the rules that are put in place to protect players and to make the game safer. And, you know, typically the older generation, you know, saying, oh, man, you know, in my generation, these guys aren't even playing football. And you know, in the Pro Bowl this year, instead of having a all-star game of tackling, it's going to be flag football.
Really?
So let me know if you go see that.
They were going to do that anyway?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this was way before. This was, you know, because the complaint was that, you know, you could have a baseball all-star game, and you could have an all-star game, and it's pretty competitive, right? Because it's pitching and that. Uh-huh. And you could have a basketball all-star game because it's, you know, it's, you could do that. But it's more like hockey and football, where the essence of it is hard hitting. They're like, well, can you really do that in an exhibition game? So football experiment, let's just play flag football. And, you know,
flag football, for people who don't know, you know, kids play it in youth leagues. Where the play ends when you, I guess, you grab a, like, a handkerchief out of the guy with the ball's pocket, right?
Well, they have these two stripes on the side, like, you know, like long plastic things that are held on by Velcro.
Those are the flags.
And you just...
But you don't tackle them. Yeah, well, that's going to be, especially in light of this, and I didn't know about that until you just said it. I think that's going to be very... interesting to see if people can respond to the NFL All-Star Game being flag football and whether there are some reforms that could be inspired by that. Katie in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Katie.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Thanks for taking my call. Thank you for doing this segment. I'm from Buffalo, and I wanted to speak to this question of being a sort of ethically ambivalent fan. It's very hard. I grew up watching it, you know, every Sunday, September to January, we'd watch the Bills, we'd get Lenovo pizza and wings after church, we'd watch together. And I, both my parents have passed away now. I'm a parent. I'm not in the church anymore. And so honestly, one of the only things I can do with my daughter that sort of conveys what it was like for me growing up and some of the good parts of spending time with her grandparents who she never met is watching the Bills together. And we go over to our friend's apartment, who they're also from Buffalo, and they make wings, and it's been a huge part of her childhood. And she was there, she's 12, and we were all watching, and it was devastating. And I posted about it on Facebook, and a friend wrote, you know, this is an unethical sport, you know, basically sort of like, what are you expecting? And I boycotted during the Kaepernick years, and then I sort of came back to it because of this feeling of connection and camaraderie that I get from watching it. And I would say in terms of watching style, I'm like you, Brian. I wince and I look away, and I basically want to see the athleticism of the offense and sort of am always in denial about what it takes to be on the defense, is what I would say. And I would also just want to mark the change over time. Like, I remember I was at the game in Cleveland when Dom Beebe bounced on his head over and over, and the network showed it, actually, like over and over. And there's just been this huge shift in how the league treats injuries and how the networks treat injuries. And also, Goodell should resign and the NFL should pay taxes. That's my last comment.
Thank you very much. Roger Goodell, the NFL commissioner. Maria in the Flatiron District, also originally from Buffalo. Hi, Maria. You're on WNYC.
Yep. Hi, guys. From Buffalo. These guys have to know what they're getting into. I want to know, this is a very pedestrian question, but what is the fine print, or is it out right out there in their contracts? Like, if you get a severe injury, like what is the minutiae surrounding the, you know, if they get an injury, they just go on the injured list, or they, if this guy is, you know, really in trouble, what happens? I mean, they know they're in the line of fire, so to speak. I mean, what's in their contracts? What are their agents doing putting them into this? They know what they're getting into.
Do you know, Bill?
Yeah. Yeah, I can't tell you. I think that what's built in into your contract is there's certain medical provisions that, you know, you're insured, number one. You are insured. But you raise a great question, because And this has sort of been a soapbox of mine. The NFL is the only major league, along with, when you look at baseball, the NBA, and hockey, whose players do not receive guaranteed contracts. You know, and it's probably the most violent sport of all of them. And in a way of answering the listener's question, yes, the players do have insurance. But I think that the league, since the league prints money, should make sure these players are taken care of wherever. I think their contracts should be guaranteed. I think you got to do away with this of being able to cut a player in the middle of the week.
When you say it's not a guaranteed contract, you mean like in baseball, we've all heard Aaron Judge just signed a 9-year contract with the Yankees. If he gets injured after 3 years, the Yankees still have to pay him for all nine years. But that's not the case for football players?
No, football players, and you hear all these things that somebody signs a $150 million contract for X years, $10 million guaranteed. That means if they cut them, if they get hurt, almost at any point, they don't have to pay the rest of that contract. Mm. And that's unlike the NBA and Major League Baseball, which have very strong unions. And those contracts are guaranteed. And I maintain that the NFL is the most grueling sport of them all, and those contracts should be paid. And I was speaking to an NFL executive the other day, and they oppose it because almost the essence of it is that you want athletes hungry. You know, you want that uncertainty. You want that knowing that, you know, we use next man up, that you are replaceable and that you could be replaced at any moment. And that's that kind of desperation that it takes to play that kind of game. So I'm not answering her question specifically. There is insurance built in, but the NFL does not guarantee your livelihood, and it should.
And there are more injuries than other sports, right? I mean, some of the sports media that I consumed yesterday after this included people saying, well, this happens in other sports too, grievous injuries. A Danish soccer player, Christian Eriksen, right, in a match for his country about 18 months ago, went into cardiac arrest and collapsed and then was resuscitated, and the game went on. Somebody just pointed out to me, one of my colleagues, a member of the Detroit Lions in the NFL, did actually have a heart attack and die during a game, and the game went on.
Chuck Hughes,
So I heard a story yesterday of somebody who died in a Little League game, baseball kid. But I feel like it's just more routine in football.
Yeah, what we're talking about here, Brian, is you're right. The big moments like this, like a player collapsing, and you know that's you know, somewhat rare, the Chuck Hughes who died in 1971. But what the issue with football is the play-to-play, just routine violence, where players kind of have their careers die on every other play. When I say die, I mean a running back who suddenly tears his ACL and is no longer the same player anymore. You're done.
Not valuable.
You know what I'm saying? And you look at this young man, Damar Hamlin, is the salt of the earth type of player who makes the NFL. He's a young player, not even vested yet. He's in his third year, sixth round draft pick, still trying to make his way. And these are the kind of players that the NFL is built on, these young, hungry players who are just trying to make it, not the Trevor Lawrence's, not the
Tom big stars.
Brady.
Yeah.
Yeah. But just the salt of the earth type of people who are trying to make it, you know, and his mother's at the game because this is a dream of his, you know, to play Pop Warner, then play high school and then go to Pitt and play. And you're a low round draft pick. You're six, but man, here you are. And he's the next man up because he's playing because the star player in front of him got hurt in week two of the season. And he's living his dream, you know, and everything is great and wonderful until it's not. So I think that's what we're talking about. Not the exception, but the routine.
Bill Roden, longtime New York Times sports columnist, now with Anscape, author of the books Third and a Mile, The Trials and Triumphs of the Black Quarterback, and $40 Million Slaves, The Rise, Fall, and Redemption of the Black Athlete. Thank you for joining us for this discussion, Bill. I appreciate it.
Brian, it's always a pleasure.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.